Hello and welcome to another episode of Checkpoint, the podcast highlighting and telling the stories of influential leaders in and around the sports industry. Today, we're excited to welcome our next guest, Edward Cole, to the show. Edward is currently the director of athletics at Fordham University and is helping the Rams navigate through this unique fall that we're all going through. Ed came to Fordham with 14 years of experience in sports marketing, business development, higher education, fundraising, and athletic development. He began his career in athletic sales before moving to the corporate world as a sports marketing manager representing brands such as Powerade and Vitamin Water. He returned to St. John's University in 2011, where he would eventually work his way up from Associate AD to VP of Development before moving on and becoming the SVP of Business Development for the NFL Fuel Up to 60 initiative. This episode, we are going to go and get a behind-the-scenes look at Ed's journey and how he has prepared himself or prepared for all the change that we're experiencing this year in sports. Ed currently lives in New York City, but for the next 45 minutes, he's here with us on Checkpoint. Ed, my man, welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
Doing great, Scott. Great to check in with you. Great to be here. Always a passion to talk about sports, whether it be, of course, our collegiate athletics world or the sports industry in general. It's a passion of mine, a love of mine, and I'm excited and happy to be with you today.
Ed, we are excited to have you as well. I mean, you come to us with a lot of different and unique perspective from an athletic director realm. And, you know, it would have been that way without COVID. And so we were just talking before we got on the air here that stepping into your first athletic director role in the face of a global pandemic, I'm really excited to unpack that. But before we do, for all you first-time listeners, just to give you guys a little feel of what we're going to be doing here, we're going to use today as a true checkpoint. So we're going to understand Ed's journey, how he got here, what he's currently doing, and most importantly, where he sees things going with Fordham over the next 6 to 12 months, you know, with the current state of where we're at. So, Ed, let's take a step back. Who are you and how did you end up in this sports world?
Great question, Scott. I think for me, obviously, always a love fan of sports, love competing in sports as growing up as a young boy. And then I'd say probably in college, I was a baseball player at Stony Brook University out east in Long Island, New York. Loved baseball. I think while I was there, I became heavily involved with our student advisory council. So I became kind of president of that. I represented the America East Conference as a rep in Indianapolis at the NCAA annual meetings, and I was like, wow, this administrative thing in terms of collegiate athletics is pretty interesting, pretty fun. You know, hard to believe you can make a career out of doing this and still be around amateur athletics and young individuals and the purity and beauty of collegiate sports. So I kind of fell in love with it during college, my academic experience there. Once my baseball career after college kind of fizzled out and ended, decided to take a job at St. John's University. My athletic director at Stony Brook was a former employee of St. John's, as well as alum and baseball player there. He had set me up with a job opportunity there and got to work for still a mentor and dear friend of mine who's the athletic director at Hofstra University now in Long Island, Rick Cole, and continued to fall in love. So went was doing school at night while working in the as an assistant athletic director, then associate athletic director in the St. John's athletic office, chasing that dream, you know, loving collegiate athletics, loving, you know, learning everything from marketing to ticket sales, the sponsorship sales, game operations, to fundraising and just wearing many hats. As you can imagine in college athletics, you know, resources aren't the best, staffing's not always the best. So you learn quickly. It's almost an MBA in itself. And I finished my MBA there. And then actually while doing that, you know, got connected with and met an alum of St. John's University, Mike Rapoli, who had co-founded the start of a beverage company called Vitamin Water. And while talking with him either about ticket sales or sponsorship of our program, you know, he was kind enough and generous enough and offered me a job to oversee sports entertainment marketing for Vitamin Water, kind of a unique little spin and pivot. And something about his conviction and his vision and his attitude that was just contagious and attractive, and took that job. And I'll always remember my dad saying, you know, at that point, again, you know, what that was 17 years ago, 18 years ago, you know, no one buys bottled water at that point in time, Scott. If you can imagine how our world has changed in 20 years, water's free out of the sink and the tap, my dad would say. But one of the best decisions I ever made, got to obviously not only just be a part of one of the greatest entrepreneurship stories of all time, but the sale to Coca-Cola in 2006. We sold the company for $4 billion. I got to stay on at Coke for 3.5 years, moved over from vitamin water to the Powerade brand, and the Olympics, the World Cup, NBA, LeBron James. It was just a real good learning experience in terms of sports business, sports entertainment, and really just the culture and environment that was, again, another incredible learning experience for me. I basically got an MBA from vitamin water, an MBA from Coca-Cola, top five brands in the world, traveling internationally and learning. And then probably around 2010, Scott, I had gotten married, had my first child, and started to get a little bit different perspective of life. And Coca-Cola had wanted me to move to Atlanta, which I was probably going to twice a month anyway, but didn't want to do that any longer. And I still had that burning desire and dream to become an athletic director and wanted to chase that collegiate athletics aspiration, and went back to St. John's. Became vice president of fundraising and development for them and vice president of athletics for them for about 3.5 years. And just always kind of drawn back to that collegiate athletics industry and to the campus life. And again, I think the purity and the amateur status and was just extremely attractive to me. Yeah, we had some changes there. I had a few different presidents in my 5 years at St. John's, and just needed a break, got a little bit burnt out in terms of that period of time, and took the opportunity with the NFL and Fuel Up to Play 60 and NFL Flag Football and the Gen Youth Foundation, and enjoyed kind of seeing the league atmosphere and working with league partners and getting to see what the NFL, the greatest sports league in the world, is all about. And I'll be honest with you though, Scott, you know, probably quickly within that process, I again started to miss campus and missed college athletics and missed, you know, where my heart was at. And I think that's the biggest lesson I'd like to give my students. I'm even an adjunct professor for sports marketing. I like to always say, you know, follow your heart, follow your gut, and you'll find success. You'll find monetary success and you'll find career success that way. And an opportunity came up at Fordham University, and here I am. Though it's been an interesting 6 months of being director of athletics here through the pandemic and COVID, I couldn't be more happier, more proud, and more lucky to be in the seat that I've always been chasing and dreaming about.
Wow. What a journey. And I think that's really funny. Your North Star had been sports from your playing days. And even though the journey to get there isn't maybe how you always saw it, the perspective nuggets that you were able to build along the way ultimately, I think, prepared you for, you know, what you're experiencing as you stepped into this role over at Fordham. And, you know, now you're at the reins, and I can only speak from being an entrepreneur and coming onto something early in building where it's like, until you're in the belly of the beast and you go through that, you compound those experiences and they turn out to be like that Jenga tower is really tall. And so when you get dealt a unique evolution or change, you don't have to go all the way back down to ground zero. And so one of the questions I'm curious before we dive into Fordham and how things are going over there now, you know, when you talk about going from, you know, scaling a company in the private sector back to the collegiate world, there's obviously a bunch of different red tape. There's a bunch of different processes. Do you find it to be more challenging in the private sector? Do you find it to be more challenging in the university world, just from a business and monetary perspective?
Yeah, great question, Scott. Great question. And obviously, you get a little bit of understanding being an entrepreneur yourself. But they're vastly different from even an entrepreneurship startup company to a private company, a private brand, to a campus, whether that be a private institution in higher education or a public institution in higher education, to a league, to a team, you know, even before some of those aspects. I've done my internships with minor league baseball and done some stuff at Madison Square Garden. And, you know, the dream for me, not that I knew anything, was always to, I'm a baseball guy, I was a Mets fan, grew up in Queens, you know, I want to be a GM of the Mets, like a lot of kids. And, you know, I think those industries are vastly different. And I think that's just been extremely helpful for me in terms of not only identifying what I want to do, and you kind of hear my career path, but my love and my heart has always led me back to campus. It's been extremely helpful to in education to understand the evolution of those places. So as an entrepreneur, you may know, you have a little bit more freedom. There's less legal counsel. There's less coverage and advisory in terms of what you can and cannot do. It's a little bit, a lot of freedom to make mistakes and learning. And then as you go to a Coca-Cola, which was a large brand, a lot of layers, a lot of process, a lot of approvals, a lot of people to get conversations with and get buy-in from, a lot of data and analytics that you drive decision-making on, a ton of strategic planning, a ton of execution calendars. And, you know, you're not able to just run as fast as you like and get things done. You got to learn a system, and you learn a process and be patient. You learn a lot of patience, but you also see the power of size and the power and strength of an organization that large and a global brand like that. And then of course you get back to campus and it's a little different in terms of the process, whether it be a state or a private school or a Catholic school like ours. You know, you kind of learn the mission, you learn a little bit of the structure and the priorities, and leadership is always a little bit different. You have a board of trustees, which is a little different, and you navigate. But I got to say, I think as we continue to progress here these days, and then, of course, even the NFL and the league structure and teams and ownership and rights fees and the trademarks and protection of rights and how everybody's trying to maybe take advantage of some things legally or illegally, and how you navigate and learn from that. I think all those have just been tremendously helpful for me in this job today, especially even a COVID and pandemic time where it's crisis, a little bit of chaos, a little bit of adjustment quickly. And whether that be budget management, whether that be sport and operational logistics, you know, whether that be expectations and collaboration on a campus with many different departments and areas, New York State, New York City guidelines and governance and navigating that, or just leading people, just leading and managing people. I'm blessed. I've been extremely lucky. I'm very fortunate. I feel like I've gotten 5 different MBAs and doctoral degrees in business management, from being an entrepreneur to a large Coca-Cola world, to the NFL, to college and higher education. So it's morphing closer together though, Scott, because you know, I think sometimes the connotation of business in college athletics is negative, right? The idea of the negativity of business, whether that be alluded to student athletes and name, image, and likeness and TV deals and NCAA checks and Power 5 football, as we're learning now. I think that business aspect sometimes could be perceived as negative. I don't feel that way. I think the business is essential for us to achieve a successful athletic department, which trickles down to a successful student athlete experience, whether that be on the playing court or surface, or the facilities and the health and safety and strength and conditioning and health and wellness that we provide them, or the student development, leadership training, mental health support we provide them. It's all essential to us being creative and finding resources to do so. And I also think I look at college athletics very much as the traditional cliche of being the front porch of any university or college. And that's imperative in terms of marketing, communications, brand building, not only just enrollment and applications, but academic, you know, promotion and qualities. Here at Fordham, we're a top 50 academic institution. Very, very proud of that. How do we help engage the community in New York City? How do we engage future students, parents, alumni, fundraising? There's a lot of benefits where I kind of do a 360 wheel around athletics and what it brings to the overall success and profile of a university. And I think I've been just well trained in that from my years of brand building, marketing, business development, revenue generation. It's all plays into that overall strategy and approach of what college athletics is today.
Yeah, I think that's really well said. And you know, through your tenure, you know, one of the things as we start to talk about the business aspect of collegiate sports is the budgeting side of things, right? And so we want to provide this incredible experience for our student athletes. Most of the time, you know, outside of the Power Five, we find universities running in a deficit. And so there's usually, you know, never enough funds to go ahead and provide what we want. You, my friend, have a background in fundraising, though. And so, you know, just reading some of the accolades of what you've done at, you know, did at St. John's and, you know, how you're able to bring that over here. You know, talk to me about as, and we're going to just go and narrow into to this budget cycle with COVID, but as fundraising has taken sort of a hit, or, you know, just the community as a whole has taken a hit, how are you guys getting creative to make sure that you're providing still the opportunity and same experience for your athletes and staff, maybe when you don't have that same fundraising arm that you would traditionally have?
Yeah, so great question. I think fundraising is more and more going to be imperative and essential to any, not only college athletics department, but also any university or college, especially, you know, during and after the pandemic. And hopefully we get through this quicker, sooner than later. But, you know, I think as compared to an NFL fan or a Coca-Cola drinker or a vitamin water drinker consumer, you know, the beauty of higher education, the beauty of college athletics is the affinity to alma mater, the affinity to the institution, right, Scott? So it's whether you you met your spouse or your life partner at your school, you have best friends that you're still close with from college in your college days, you got your first job or your current job from an alumni network that you continue to stay close with, or you had tremendous athletic success on a court or playing field and you made your friends there, or you were lucky enough to get a scholarship that helped pay for your education that set your career forward. All of those lines of affinity live on, and they're almost, you know, they're it's affinity and love for alma mater that no brand or no fandom or no outside, you know, consumer product good could ever achieve from you, because you went through that experience, right? Whether you did 4 or 5 X amount of years at your alma mater institution, those years help shape who you are and help shape your life in a number of different ways. So that affinity to me is so powerful and so attractive. And, you know, what we try to do from a fundraising standpoint is find out exactly what your love of alma mater is and where it kind of started and what drew it. Could have been a faculty member, could have been a professor, could have been your roommate. It could have been a club you started on campus about sports management, who knows? So, And then we really try to tell a story, and we try to linkage the opportunity for you to reconnect or continue to be engaged and generous to your school and build out a plan and a strategy. And I think a lot of times, I know there's a lot of salesmanship to it, there's a lot of business development to it, and of course revenue generation, but it's an authentic, genuine connection and story and narrative that we're creating in that capital campaign or that solicitation. And I think that's the beauty of higher ed. And I know, especially us being in New York City, you know, facilities become more and more expensive to maintain, and expenses go through the roof, and whether it be healthcare, whether it be facility maintenance or salaries and compensation, especially again in New York City. But we just try to continue to be honest, transparent, and genuine on how your support will help currently impact our institution, or more importantly, bring us to that next level of growth and improvement that you as an alum want to see. And I think that's our effort. And how do we get that? It's strong relationship building. It's aggressive communication and transparency. And then it's really gratitude. It's generous gratitude, constantly reminding you and thanking you for everything you do and you choose to do, right? Philanthropy is something that you have many options. You have many ways to give, whether you're religious, whether you've been impacted or your family has by disease or a virus or any kind of concern. You know, local schools, YMCAs, Boys and Girls Clubs, there's many ways to give today. It's extremely competitive, for lack of a better term. But thanking those that are supportive of all alma mater and our Fordham University, we can't thank them enough, because we couldn't do it without them. And it's that simple. And continuing to keep that top of mind.
That's exactly right. And I mean, there has to be that symbiotic relationship. And I think, you know, as an athletic director, you wear so many different hats, right? Because you want to engage alumni, you want to provide a great experience for current athletes. And then, oh, by the way, we have to continue to figure out ways to innovate and stay relevant in the recruiting world to make sure that we're filling the top of the funnel with athletes that, you know, will represent the Fordham Rams as they're meant to be. So I mean, you guys are constantly have so many balls in the air that you're juggling, it's really impressive how you're able to navigate through those waters. Now, when we start to, you know, talk about as Fordham is going through this experience, you know, one of the great things getting ADs on the podcast is to hear how each school is navigating the COVID waters. So not going to drown ourselves in the conversation here, but would love to, you know, over the last 6 months, you know, from March when we found out this was going on through the evolution of figuring out fall sports, why don't you shed a little light on the, you know, for the listeners on how you guys have handled that both as a university and then as a conference as a whole?
Great question. As you can imagine, a lot of conversations, a lot of meetings, a lot of discussions, a lot of research, a lot of reading, right? Best in class examples, what other schools, other conferences, other universities and colleges are currently doing. First thing we did was establish a task force internally, a strong group of individuals that could help us, whether that be from Res Life to University Health and Services to sports medicine to our team physician and doctors, you know, to our administrators, to public safety on campus, and try to get all those minds together to figure out the best way for us to reopen. And then we continue to meet on probably twice a week, whether that be through the conference, happy through the NCAA. There's a group of New York State athletic directors. You know, the difference between many schools and conferences right now is state regulations, state guidelines. So that's something we pay attention to. And honestly, Scott, it's continuing to read and digest and be open-minded and learn, because nobody knows the answers. Nobody has the playbook to share. And we continue to do that. So we've been lucky in the sense of it's almost just surrounding yourself with people that know more or have experience in their area, trusting them, sharing the ownership, you know, sharing the impact, you know, empowering everybody to make decisions in their areas, whether it be facilities, whether that be in terms of campus security, whether that be in terms of our doctors and their views, our coaches and knowing their student athletes better than we do, parents inclusion, getting students involved. The student athlete has been so active and involved the last 6 months with me and my start of my tenure. I can't thank them enough. Whether that be COVID, whether that be social injustice, whether that be mental health, whether that be strength and conditioning, whether that be academics. And they just know their peers, they know the climate, and they're living it day by day, right? Why try to get in their shoes when they're actually walking in their shoes every day? That's been helpful. And I think from a safety perspective, we try to take every precaution possible. So right now, our student athletes have had, I think, 3 rounds of mandatory testing, Scott. They're a part now of a daily surveillance testing. So probably, again, once a week, they all get tested again. On a daily basis, they have a mobile system, a mobile vital check system that checks their symptoms. They're given a daily pass to enter campus. They come to us, get their temperature checked. They're given a bracelet to get clearance before working out. And our team physicians, we have 2 team doctors that oversee all of that with our sports medicine group. So we're trying as much as possible. They're wearing masks. They're doing, you know, obviously hand sanitizers, and we're doing daily sensitizing of all of our areas, our facilities, and so forth. And we're trying to protect them as much about small pods of working out, no more than 6 in a group, and just staying outdoors as much as possible. Of course, I'll be honest with you, I feel more comfortable about our practice and workout regime in terms of safety. Of course, you worry more when they go back to their dorms or apartments and socializing. And their choices there naturally being college students. But we've been very lucky and blessed. Our coaches, our staff, our team medicine, our university officials, we've been so far so good about 6 weeks into this process.
That's great to hear. You know, and it's always like, I mean, I think getting the opportunity to interview thought leaders in this space, I think one of the more interesting things right now is it's very hard to get a cohesive consensus moving forward. And so depending, like you said, on what state, what level you're at in sport, everyone's affected very differently. And so, Ed, it's no surprise that you guys were able to go ahead and drum that up, you know, really quickly and you know, sort of grab the bull by the horns there. So kudos, you know, going to be excited to check back in and hear the progression as that goes. So going to transition here a little bit, right? And you said something earlier on your vitamin water days that I'm going to go back to. And your dad said that 18 years ago, Ed, we're not buying water in a bottle, right? We got it in the faucet. Well, obviously things have changed, right? And technology has evolved and there's just been a ton of iterations over the last 2 decades. I'm curious, as you're now leading Fordham into the future, are there any technology providers or any solutions that you guys are currently using that stick out that sort of help you guys as we navigate through name, image, and likeness or healthcare or mental health? Anything that, you know, sticks out that you guys are implementing over there?
Yeah, you know, there's been a lot of conversations. Of course, there's been a lot of more aggressive use of technology during the stretch. I'm sure you're hearing that from everybody in every industry. And, you know, whether that be, of course, our Zoom and our Skype use today in terms of both the virtual communication. And I think not only through this pandemic, but I think we're going to continue to see that be an easier virtual way to have meetings and kind of avoid as much in presence or trying to organize large groups to get to be present together. Moving forward, which might be helpful, might make us more efficient. You know, I think we're doing a lot in terms of social media platforms, in terms of communicating with our fan base, our alumni, our donors, but even our students that way. They're aggressive. They're on social media. You know, it's a very much part of their life, Scott. So why try to recreate the wheel and go to where they are, go with it, where they are comfortable communicating. And whether that be Instagram, and whether that be obviously Twitters and you and I know in terms of LinkedIn and career networking opportunities that social media brings to them. You know, in terms of name, image, and likeness, we've had some conversations, whether it be with some of the groups like G3 Marketing and Influencer and Athlete Life. And we're having those conversations to try to get some feedback and thoughts on where that world is headed. I do feel strong in that conversation based on my previous, you know, career of Coca-Cola and Vitamin Water, a lot of the athlete endorsements we did. So I do feel somewhat educated on that space and how that world looks. Now, with that said, you know, you're concerned, of course, with kind of the free market, free agent world that it provides our student athletes in all sports and all opportunities, and want to give them and support them in any benefit possible. But I'm intrigued to watch the litigation of that and how laws are created and how it gets a little bit more detail with what the regulations and restrictions will be. But I'm excited, you know, I believe in that free market space. I believe in the opportunities for our student athletes, as we do for any students in any marketplace. But we, you know, we've done a lot in terms of working with organizations like Real Recruit and ARMS, and doing surveys and doing anonymous surveys, trying to get feedback from our student athletes so they feel comfortable talking about any and all issues. We want to have those safe places for them to communicate. Our students have done a great job creating a connect group as well as a herd group to make sure that there is a student-led, student-driven causes that they have places to communicate that's not administratively, you know, driven or monitored by coaches or admin. And I think technology has allowed us to be creative in that fashion. You know, I think tickets moving forward, Scott, it's going to be mobile, right? If it hasn't been already. You know, I think sponsorships are going that digital direction, right, in terms of digital advertising and sponsorships. You see a lot of that being done right now with no fans at games. How are sponsors, you know, connecting and getting their value? And that's something we want to pay attention to. And I think we'll continue to look at that space in terms of opportunities. And, you know, whether it be, you know, the ESPN Plus of the world, which obviously we are a partner of, the Patriot League and the Atlantic 10, and, you know, the app and mobile access and streaming, to me, is the future, is the continued future of our current young, whether that be millennial or Gen Z, and how they're taking in and consuming games and content. And we'll do the best we can to try to do that. But I'll be honest with you, Scott, you know, the best success I've had thus far during 6 months, whether that be of donors and fundraising and getting gifts or completing some capital projects or renovations, it has been the ability to get folks back on the phone, Scott. I think some folks have kind of remember the value of phone calls as well, where, you know, they have the opportunity to speak and communicate and express themselves. I think they've found a little bit more time during this pandemic, which has been a benefit to me and our organization as well. But I think the value of a phone call has gained some additional volume and love again as well. That's been a finding I've had, is the ability to connect with relationships, and people value the opportunity to speak to each other again.
They need it, right? More now than ever, I think we need to continue to find ways, whether we go back down the well or we look into future platforms like StreamYard and Zoom, that human connectivity when we're not able to always go out to the bar or go out to the park and do it. I think you're spot on there. So before we move on to, you know, sort of where you see things going, you know, ending up the fall semester into the spring semester, I'd be remiss without touching on the mental health component, because, you know, I think this is something that as a society, we are all going through. And, you know, I try and put myself in the shoes of an athlete or an athletic administrator where, you know, what you envisioned is just completely different than the reality that we're being served up. So how are you guys handling the mental health conversations over at Fordham right now?
Great question. And a major issue, I think, across the country, across the world. We were very aggressive out of the gate. The university has been kind enough, and they provide us two psychologists that work with our athletes, sports psychologists that help us in terms of our issues. We have approximately 540 student athletes that we are responsible for on the varsity side, many more in terms of club and rec. And we're sensitive to all of our students when they first got sent home and were kind of forced home during COVID, you know, especially high energy, high effort, high routine student athletes that are used to long days of working out, training, watching video, going to class. To all of a sudden now being sent home and shut down, I was very, very concerned with kind of that, what that would do to them in terms of their mental capacity. Our university has done a good job with those two doctors and psychologists that are afforded to us. We've done a number of virtual outreach, individual outreach, team outreach, department outreach, to be honest with you, with those individuals. We also outsource some of our mental health needs to a group called Sportstrata, Scott, that's been very, very helpful for us. So we're able to get additional support and resources from their doctors and experts that, if needed, and there. And of course, as the pandemic lingered on, Scott, we continue to deal with other issues, right? So, you know, lack of commencement, lack of graduation for some of our seniors, lack of internship opportunities for our student athletes that have internships lined up for the summer. Social injustice, which continues to be a major issue and concern for us, how that has impacted the lives of our student athletes. Now, not only just the fear of the virus and being home, many parents have lost jobs, economic struggles, financial woes. How does that impact our student athletes at home? The political climate that we're all dealing with, it's very, very challenging, very, very overwhelming, and honestly, very concerning. So that's an abundance of stuff to deal with on top of whether my team is going to be able to practice or my team's going to be able to compete this semester. I think our athletes are so regimented, so strong-willed, so strong leaders. They're used to having a schedule, whether that be athletically as well as academically, and to kind of throw a wrench in that has been tough. So we pay very, very close attention. We offer a lot of webinars and virtual outreach and individual sessions with our physicians and our psychologists for mental health, and we continue to monitor it closely. And that even goes to our coaches, trying to remind them to put themselves in the feet of our student athletes, what they're going through, and try to do daily and weekly check-in just to say hello. How things going? What are you up to? Forget about athletics. Forget about training for a second. How are you feeling? How are you thinking? How are you handling this? How are you keeping busy? Are you watching movies? You're watching TV? You're reading books? You're listening to music? What's kind of your escape? And to assure that we are trying to provide them some solutions on that area.
Yeah, and well done. And, you know, I think that's one of those areas where it's been very taboo to talk about, especially in the athletic world. And we continue to disrupt and break that stigma. And so, you know, it's been a really cool byproduct of Checkpoint. Not only are we getting leaders from the collegiate space, but now we're getting folks that, that played sport at the highest level coming on and telling their story. And so our goal is to say, hey, everybody is a human first and then an athlete as a byproduct. And so if you are feeling this or you're experiencing this, please just know you're not alone. And that goes from the student to the parent to the coach to the administrator. And so, you know, for future resources and listeners, I highly encourage looking up the We Are All a Little Crazy nonprofit, also the hashtag Same Here movement with Eric Cusin. He is just shaking up the whole world because, Ed, at the end of the day, not one in five are a little crazy. we're all going through this together. And so I think the more that we can let these folks know that there is the ability to be vulnerable and that someone else is going through the same story or same experience in some capacity, the earlier we can get that, you know, conversation going, the better off we'll be. So cool. So this has been really fun, right? So we start to understand who you are as a person before Fordham, what you guys are doing over there, you know, during this time. Let's look forward a little bit. So as fall starts to wind down and we look into spring, is there optimism on the horizon for the Rams, or what are some things that we can be on the lookout for?
Sure. So it's something that we even talked about in a meeting this morning is, you know, for a lot of our fall sports, including football and that being men's and women's soccer and volleyball, we are looking to move those fall seasons into spring in terms of competitions. So obviously the strategy and planning towards that, not only in terms of actual scheduling and whether it be conference and non-conference and the travel aspect of that, but we will have a lot of sports going at the same time, potentially in the spring. So how do we manage that from a standpoint of facilities? How do we manage that from a standpoint of sports medicine, strength and conditioning, locker rooms, and make sure that obviously we are maintaining our safety and health protocols, but also make sure that it's not impacting negatively any experience of our student athletes. So we're doing a lot of planning in terms of what that will look like. How do we balance the scheduling aspect of that? Could be a lot of games going on at the same time. Could be a lot of practices going on at the same time. And just trying to make sure that we are being proactive. You know, I do think our coaches and our student athletes are just so excited to get back out and back there in terms of competing and having competitions that, you know, we're working closely together. We're understanding of the limitations and the challenges. And it's exciting kind of to see how close knit, you know, another silver lining of this time is how close knit everybody has gotten together and kind of been forced together to overcome and deal with together. This wasn't really the spring season when we canceled spring sports and the end of the winter and basketball tournaments, but now it's through the fall and it's impacting, you know, even though we're confident about our winter seasons, including basketball, we may not have fans there. So there's a lot of adversity that our group has had to deal with together. And I think it's only brought us closer and it's only brought us a higher level of gratitude and appreciation for what we do have. And we're lucky to be open as a campus. We're lucky to have some in-person classes, and we're lucky to have, you know, folks walking around campus out there. A lot of schools chose not to open up this semester, understandably so. And we just feel extremely lucky and blessed, and we're excited to hopefully start some basketball at the end of November and continue through the spring with the remainder of our sports. So fingers crossed. We're just happy to be out there and competing.
Yeah, 100%. And it's going to be fun to check back in with you. You know, I mean, not only is this changing week to week, it's changing hour to hour. You know, I mean, it's, you know, so incredibly challenging to have foresight as to what it's going to look like here, you know, as we roll through the winter and the spring. But you know, I think that you guys have a great plan in place, and we'll be excited to see how this all unfolds, but very confident that you guys are in good hands over there. So Ed, as we start to wind down, I'm going to shift away a little bit from Fordham and dial in on you here. And, you know, I think that, you know, you've done a great job telling your story, but, you know, we have one question that we've been asking all of our guests, really excited to get your answer here. So if you could share with our listeners one thing that you've done in your life that you would recommend they do or experience in theirs, what would that be and why?
You know, I think when you heard a little bit of my story early on, whether that was collegiate athletics or vitamin water or Coca-Cola or the NFL or back to collegiate athletics, It's a little bit of taking chances, Scott, and I think you got to sometimes follow your gut. And I gave you the vitamin water story, and that's one that's forever changed my perspective. And I was lucky to have tremendous mentors there. I still do. And we talked a lot about, you know, outworking people and attitude over skills and the idea of building a true culture and environment. I was lucky to go through that, you know, in my late 20s. And I think it's essential in my career today that I still bring all those lessons, you know, 15, 20 years later to the table in terms of how we go about management and how we go about leadership and how we go about strategic planning and building a culture and environment. I think, you know, it's easy to follow the traffic. It's easy to follow the obvious opportunities or interests or loves. I think sometimes it's healthy to go in a different direction and experience something else. And I think for every experience I've been at, I've been fortunate to take away a ton of knowledge and a ton of experience from it that's made me, you know, put me in the position I am today, not only just professionally, but personally and in terms of self-happiness and self-comfort in terms of what I've been chasing and what I'm looking for in terms of dreams and aspirations. I think be open-minded, try some new things. And I think that plays to your technology conversation, right? We don't know really what the future is. It changes moment to moment. So be open-minded about something new, a new league, a new organization, a new you know, area of opportunity that you don't know where it's going to take you. Kind of ride that wave and enjoy that experience. And don't be so structured or closed-minded to it not being exactly where you want to go. Nobody knows where you want to go. And yes, I still want to be the GM of the New York Mets, but that's not where it's taking me. That's not where my heart's gone. And I think be open-minded. Don't close out opportunity. Take some chances. Take some risks, especially at a point in life where maybe you don't have a family to worry about or a relationship to worry about. You know, I think experience as much as you can. And I like to tell my students, you know, finding your dream job is continuing to eliminate what you don't want to do as much as figuring out what you do want to do.
Well, listeners, I don't have to say anything, but I will tell you that success leaves clues. And we are moving into the 30s of guests, and not making this up, probably 75% have given an answer within the same spectrum of what you just delivered. I couldn't agree more. It teaches so many lessons of being comfortable and the uncomfortable. And the destination really is the journey. So we have to start embracing every move, take advantage of the choices that are put on our plate, and ultimately we reap what we sow there.
I love that, Scott. And I think I would like to say it's not just the experience and how powerful the experiences are. It's your reflection and learnings from the experience.
Ooh. And on that note, guys, I am not going to say another word. Ed, this has been an absolute amazing 45 minutes. If our guests want to learn more about what you're doing over at Fordham, learn more about the Rams athletic program, where can they reach you or find you on social media?
Sure. So it's the website for our athletic department is FordhamSports.com. My email address is ecole@fordham.edu. I love exchanging via email. And as you know, Scott, how you and I connected and how we have mutual friends. And I believe strongly in the network, whether it be for our alumni or within the sports industry or specific industry. But I think LinkedIn does a tremendous job. I'm very active on there, too. So connect on LinkedIn. Would love to do that. Please, anytime.
All you listeners out there, just remember that networking is one letter away from not working. So this is one person that I highly recommend you reach out to. There are nuggets for days that he can drop, and you will just leave the conversation 1% better than you entered it. So on that note, Ed, from Check and Checkpoint, thank you so much for coming on. And we hope to see you again here in the near future for a check-in. So thank you again. And for all you listeners, be sure to check yourself. Ed, thanks again for coming.